Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by URI political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
Scott McKay is on vacation, so investigative reporter Tim White from Channel 12 has agreed to step in. Nice to have you, Tim.
Hi, Elizabeth.
And our special guest this week is Jim Vincent, the head of the local chapter of the NAACP. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning, Elizabeth.
This week started out with big news about the PawSox. The team announced it has been sold to a group that includes Red Sox leadership and several Rhode Islanders. And the new owners plan to move the team to Providence. Jim Vincent, what do you think? Is this good news?
Well, you know, I'm a baseball fan. I love the Red Sox. I love the PawSox. But it's all in the details in terms of what it's going to cost our state. Obviously, the number one priority in our state is jobs and whether or not that can fit into this puzzle of vacant land that's in that area that's being designated for the stadium. Whether or not that makes sense is going to determine whether or not I'm in favor of it or not.
A lot of economists seem to think public funds should not be used for a new stadium. Maureen, what do you think?
I think that's right. I think we have to be cautious about that. My sense is that what this consortium is going to ask for is rights to land. And it's not exactly the same thing. And also some tax incentives and possibly some ability to use some of the parking that's already been planned. But we really have to wait and see how this plays out. And I think it's really good that we're asking serious questions about this. This is a wonderful, at first blush, initiative. But I think we have to think long and hard, particularly when it comes to the plans for biotech and high-tech jobs. Can they exist together? Or is this one going to preclude the other?
I've also been hearing a lot of concerns about ticket prices going up, issues around traffic in downtown Providence. Tim White, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with both Maureen and Jim. It's how this cake is going to be baked. And, you know, the new co-owner, Jim Skeffington, has said that he doesn't want to float any moral obligation bonds, you know, that four-letter word in the wake of 38 Studios to build the stadium. But keep in mind, the land that Maureen talked about, the land that's going to be donated, we already floated a bond for that. $38 million to buy that I-195 land. So, you know, the parcel that they use for this proposed stadium, if it falls into that, clearly that's already a significant public expenditure just by giving them the land.
Lots of things to watch. Turning to politics now, we saw an apparent dust-up this week between Governor Gina Raimondo and House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello over comments Raimondo made at a national governor's meeting in Washington, D.C. Raimondo said lawmakers make closed-door deals and changes to the governor's budget proposal. Maureen, what does this suggest, if anything, about the upcoming budget negotiations?
Well, I think it's definitely going to be more difficult. I really think that this was a political mistake on the part of the governor. I think it was imprudent of her. I mean, yes, there are deals that are made at budget time. And the idea that she was talking about this and sort of denigrating in some way the process in Rhode Island, I think was a huge mistake. I think she went way out over her skis. And the other thing that I thought it did is it really underscored, particularly with Mattiello's response, who's the boss?
The way I took it was welcome to Smith Hill, Governor Raimondo. I mean, clearly the Speaker of the House saw those comments that you referenced. And by the way, Governor, the internet exists. People up here are going to see those. And the Speaker of the House was flexing his political muscle. He didn't appreciate those comments. And, you know, some of them may be true, by the way. A lot of these, but the budget process does happen behind closed doors. It's at the 11th hour. And watching the sausage get made is ugly and not transparent. But guess what? These early stages, you don't call someone's baby ugly, you know?
Jim Vincent, what do you think?
Well,
political,
you know,
misstep here?
I think it might have been. I can't definitively say that it was because I think, you know, there's some people that applauded her, you know, in the general Rhode Island public. So, you know, she is the governor of the entire state. However, I think, you know, by her calling him, she realized that she needed to kind of maybe walk that back a little bit.
I mean, you know, they've apparently made up. But my question is, will this in any way push Mattiello to be more transparent?
I don't know that it's going to push him to be more transparent because I think he feels very confident in the fact that we do have all these hearings. The other thing we have to remember is, and she alluded to this, the governor, in her comments, this happens in all states. Like they don't have private meetings in Congress, like they don't have private last-minute deals that go on. And I think she stepped on a lot of toes, and I think it's going to come back one way or the other.
The director of the State Health Department, Dr. Michael Fine, has just handed in his resignation. He's dealt with several big public health issues, including a drug overdose epidemic, fears about Ebola in a state with a sizable Liberian community. Jim Vincent, how would you rate his performance?
I think he did an excellent job, and he's a big loss. I'm really saddened to hear the fact that he would no longer be there. People in my community, the African-American community, African people of color, love this guy, and they thought he did a tremendous job. He was really sensitive. He really focused in on the Office of Minority Health. You mentioned Ebola. There was also work in terms of HIV and AIDS. We couldn't ask for a better Department of Health director, so we're really, really saddened to see him go.
Maureen, what do you think the challenges will be in finding the next health director?
Well, I think one of the challenges will be, and this may play into Dr. Fine's leaving, although we don't know whether that was the preference of Governor Raimondo, it doesn't pay very well. This is a physician that makes under $150,000 a year. It's a very complex and demanding job. And so it's hard getting a replacement. And I think part of it may have to do with the fact that the compensation isn't so great.
My sense is that's a very hard position to fill, and we'll see how the governor does it with that. But I got the sense that I didn't really see anyone from the Raimondo administration clamoring to save him, to keep him in the job.
The ACLU has put out a report on what they call the school-to-prison pipeline. It's calling attention to the disproportionate number of school suspensions for black students and the disproportionate number of police stops and incarceration rates. Jim Vincent, do you see this as connected to the protests in Providence and elsewhere over the deaths of young black men at the hands of police?
No, I don't. I see this as an affirmation of the conditions here in Rhode Island over the last couple of decades. There was no surprise to me that there's disparities in the schools, in the courts, in the prisons. We've known this for years. For the ACLU to do a study that just shows what we already know, I thought was good. We have a problem here in Rhode Island. The Wall Street 24/7 poll, study just came out and said that Rhode Island is the third worst state for blacks in the United States. So it aligns closely with that study. So I think we have a problem here. I think there are people who are in denial. They don't want to acknowledge the fact that there's racial problems in Rhode Island. And we're never going to go anywhere as a state until that issue is dealt with.
Don't you think, though, that those racial problems contribute to the anger that people feel perhaps rightfully about the deaths?
Absolutely. People that are victims themselves, of course, are going to identify with other people that are victims in other places. So there's a lot of frustration here in terms of the fact that nobody seems to want to do anything. Nobody wants to acknowledge that it exists. There's been, I don't know how many studies that have all said the same things. We have a problem. We need to do something about it. We need leadership, and we need people to figure out what exactly needs to be done, and let's do it.
Tim White from WPRI, what's your sense of this report?
Well, there was actually some things in there that surprised me, and one of them was their look at this so-called zero-tolerance policy, and the one example they used is the broad definition of weapon. You know, you had a kid, I don't know if you remember, that chewed a Pop-Tart into a gun, and they were expelled. And so instead of dealing with discipline internally, I'm not a teacher, I'm not a school administrator, and I'm sure there are challenges there, but the study found there's been a huge uptick in kids that are kicked out of school, and it's a higher amount are African-American children that happens with, instead of dealing with it internally and some of that discipline. So clearly they're going to have to look at that.
Yeah, I think as a state we need to take a look at that, because we don't need our kids to be suspended when there's other ways of dealing
right.
with it. And in terms of black kids, it's like maybe nine times more. I mean, some ridiculous figure that can't be explained any other way other than bias.
We're out of time, so we'll have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on the roundtable, Maureen Moakley.
Thank you.
Tim White from WPRI.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
And Jim Vincent of the NAACP.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. Ian Donis and Scott McKay will be back next week. I'm Elizabeth Harrison. This is Rhode Island Public Radio.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is made possible by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.